All right. So then good afternoon, everybody. We're going to call this meeting of the TRPA Environmental Improvement, Transportation, and Public Outreach Committee to order. The date is Wednesday, March 24th, 2021, and it is 1:20 p.m., and we are having a virtual meeting today. The first item on the agenda is the termination of a quorum. So, Mario, would you please take roll?
Ms. Faustinos? Ms. Gustafson?
Here.
Ms. Hill?
Here.
Mr. Lawrence?
Here.
Ms. Novosel?
Here.
Ms. Williamson?
Here.
Mr. Yates?
Here.
Mr. Chair, we have a quorum.
All right, excellent. Thank you, Maria. I'll now go over the meeting rules for the day. I mean, it is a virtual meeting, so I want to kind of get these sort of the ground rules out on the record. For the public to observe and participate in the meeting, go to www.trpa.gov and select the March 24th, 2021 Governing Board meeting on the calendar and follow the link to the webinar. Members of the public can find all meeting materials there as well. To participate in this committee meeting with comments, please utilize the hand-raising function in the GoToWebinar platform at the appropriate agenda item. With your hand raised, you'll be unmuted by TRPA staff and have 3 minutes to address the committee. If you have contacted TRPA for reasonable accommodation and received a unique PIN for dial-in, please make sure you enter that PIN so that you may be identified and unmuted by TRPA staff. If you are using GoToWebinar's Instant Join web app, please make sure it is opened in the Google Chrome browser and that you allow access to your microphone in order to be unmuted. If you're joining via the audio stream, please note this is a listen-only option. If you wish to address the committee, you will need to log in via GoToWebinar on the computer, tablet, or smartphone. And if you are joining via the call-in number posted on the website, then again, please note this is a listen-only option. To committee members, if you wish to speak, just alert me via the chat function. If you're online, or speak up if you're calling in. But please make sure you send your chat just to the panelists and the organizers. And then lastly, a reminder to the committee members that the chat function is really only to indicate a desire to speak and not meant for any sidebar conversations. So with those ground rules out of the way, the next item is the approval of the agenda. And, you know, Julie, or staff, is there any changes to the agenda?
No changes, Mr. Chair.
Excellent. So we'll just go ahead and deem the agenda approved for the record. And then that will take us to our next agenda item, which is a briefing on the 2020 Linking Tahoe Regional Transportation Plan / Sustainable Community Strategy, the final draft, and discussion and possible direction on sustainable transportation funding as we move forward. Before I kind of hand it over, I believe I'm going to hand it over to Michelle. I do want to thank the committee for last month's meeting. I thought it was a great session, really trying to get some of those foundational questions and issues identified up front and early. Now we're going to be talking about the RTP and some sustainable transportation funding opportunities. And again, I hope that we can have a robust discussion just like we had last month. So with that, Michelle, I will turn it over to you and you can kick off the presentation.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Tracy. Michelle Glickert, Principal Planner for the Transportation Program. Today, I'm thrilled to say that our final draft regional transportation plan is out. Thank you for getting us this far, helping us with those tough topics around transit and now funding. Earlier this morning, I presented the final draft plan goals and policies to the Regional Plan Implementation Committee. And next month, we'll be seeking recommendations from several committees, the Tahoe Transportation Commission, APC, RPIC, and Governing Board. But today, I'm going to summarize the plan for you all, discuss a little bit about public comments, and focus on the approach to achieving our transportation goals. And that'll be before turning it over to Nick to talk about transportation funding. Next slide. So reviewing quickly the plan structure, you can find the plan right now at trpa.gov/RTP, But this RTP is oriented to climate action, big part of meeting our GHG goals, reducing our mobile source emissions, and the VMT associated with it. As shown here, the plan includes six chapters as well as an executive summary, along with several appendices. Our first two chapters of the plan, that really covers the context and many of our regulatory requirements. And the majority of the plan is really chapter 3 and 4. That's the heart of it, laying out the transit trails, tech and community strategies and programs, and chapter 4, the reasonable funding for them. 5 and 6 are all about monitoring the system and tracking our goals, which was a hot topic this morning at ARPIC. As we adopt a new VMT standard with a high level of adaptive management, we need to ensure we're meeting our goals along the way. But this is really a community's plan. It's developed with the locals, as demonstrated with over 50 individual organization and individual comments, which are attached to the staff summary. Most of the changes in the plan in response to feedback were primarily in chapters 3 and 4. 3, we reinforced the notion that transit hubs are needed, but one size does not fit all. We also discussed a little bit more about the importance of roadway adaptive management for congestion, as well as emergency response. And chapter 4 now incorporates more on the project priorities developed through the bi-state consultation and development of new transportation funding. And in the appendices, the table of projects was updated with the most recent cost. The revenue narrative was updated with recently adopted local funding on the South and North Shores. Next slide. So the plan is organized similar to the last. This RTP has a broad approach in Chapter 3, which identifies what we need, what we're focused on, and how we want to achieve it. We build on projects like the trail connecting Incline Village to Sand Harbor. So the plan lays out the remaining segments needed to complete the trail around the lake. Transit, we're modernizing the system to keep local transit free, make it frequent and even fun. The plan includes smaller shuttles suited for our neighborhoods and regional routes off the hill that can bring employees as well as visitors to Tahoe without their cars. We really capitalize on technology, which is tied to travel options, and that may be providing electric car charging stations or information when the next bus or shuttle will be arriving, and also letting you know that the parking lot's full and where else you might want to visit instead. Quarters and communities is where land use and transportation come together for the multimodal planning. Now, and it's not just at a single problem spot, but along an entire corridor. And this comprehensive planning helps align our priorities. Like the SR 89 corridor plan, it's complete and the trail feasibility is underway. And another priority recently adopted is the Main Street Management Plan. All corridors are part of the transportation plan, including the Resort Triangle plan, which was recently adopted. That's the corridor plan for 28 and 89. These transportation plans include shuttle options and parking management to curb VMT. Next slide. Our approach to planning is to understand who's moving around Tahoe. Tahoe travel reveals different user behavior, and at the end of the day, we need to address everyone. Each traveler has a unique pattern, and those strategies I just mentioned need to be designed for each travel type. Part of that approach and framework for transportation planning is looking at all of our users. Because we are a recreation destination, we don't see the typical weekday congestion. We see ours during a heavy recreation times, like winter access at our ski resorts, summer months where people are trying to get to those trailheads and get to those beach spots around the lake. Visitors make up the top two tiers shown here. At the top, we have those longer trips coming in from outside the region. 96% arrive by car. So this plan lays out how to increase that 4% non-auto mode share, which is not an easy one without controls outside of the basin. But with committed partnerships, we've included regional park and rides, regional bus connections like the pilot project that will connect Reno to Incline this summer. Now, once they are here, our visitors, the plan includes improving travel by keeping local transit free and making it more frequent. And in the middle, we have more of our recreation trips. That's the internal travel to all of the recreation destinations. So we're not doing too bad with over 34% getting around by bike, foot, and bus. This is also where those corridor management plans come in, right? Adding transit options to recreation destinations, paid parking, and managing the roadway. And of course, the base, our residents and the employees of our region. Those trips include work, school, and the errands we have to run. 90% are completed by car. So there's a great opportunity for improvements here with better transit, regional commuter routes, as well as connecting trails to popular destinations. This next year's pilot project for Commute Tahoe will be working with our two TMAs to reach large and small employers with travel information and incentive ideas for the employees. Our approach also incorporates tracking the day user. That's a hot topic for revenue discussions as of late, and one section we've expanded in the plan since the plan was released. Next slide. Also expanded in the plan is the final draft, which is you'll see a call out now around the bi-state consultation. Over the last 5 years, the region and partners from the states of California and Nevada have been partnering to create a world-class transportation system for Tahoe that serves visitors and residents' travel needs in ways that preserve the region's environment. This snapshot is of those near-term priority transportation projects identified working with the implementation partners, the private sector, and our local governments. There's broad agreement. New funding is needed for transportation, and through the coordination among the bi-state consultation, TTD, and local governments, there's significant movement towards realizing new funding options for these projects. And now I'm going to turn it over to Nick, who's going to speak a little bit more about project cost and funding.
Thank you, Michelle. Hopefully you all can hear me. Good afternoon. My name is Nick Haven. I am the Transportation and Long Range Planning Division Manager at TRPA. And so what I'd like to do, if you could go to the next slide, what I'd like to do today with you is kind of walk through the regional transportation plan's financial assumptions and try and get everyone on a common level of understanding with that existing financial status and overall framework of how do we look to fund the RTP, because I think that can help create a bridge and some context to the sustainable funding initiative that we're undertaking in cooperation with this committee. And so the RTP in total has a $2.4 billion price tag. I know that number's big, but it is over 25 years, and it's identified some funding sources. As Michelle mentioned in Chapter 4, there's a lot of additional information on how we arrive at, you know, how are we going to fund this regional transportation plan? And then the additional $1 billion doesn't have any funding identified. But combined with project list, that represents kind of that full set of needs for transportation in the longer term. And so today, we'd like to focus on this $2.4 billion number, which you'll also hear referred to as the constrained plan. And so what we're going to do now is walk through some visibility on the assumptions that make up this number. So next slide, please. And so the funding assumed for the RTP, as you will see in it, already includes a multi-sector approach. You know, we talk about that a lot in terms of, you know, how we found success with the EIP and really that shared commitment across all sectors, you know, federal, state, local, private sector, and now in this plan, regional. And so you'll see shortly, but what we have included are not only those kind of in-hand assured funding sources that exist that are on a reoccurring basis, whether they're formulas and annual allocations, but we also include new or anticipated funding that, you know, is reasonably foreseeable is kind of the key term. And that's really from various competitive grants or other kind of unrealized but potential sources. And so we have kind of the monies that we can rely on and then what funds are still needed from those grants and other, you know, new localized sources or other. And so this RTP also includes, as one of those unrealized sources, is a floor amount of $20 million a year for new regional funding. And why we're terming it regional funding is that it's a new source that the region must come together collaboratively and seek and put into place. And I know some of you have participated in the RPIC meeting this morning. you heard a lot of discussion about the need for additional transportation funding and actually beginning to tie some of our systems to the success of receiving that funding. And so this is where we want to kind of gain agreement today on, you know, is this amount the right starting point? And I think what we're trying to do is illustrate in context with the RTP of how this 20 million a year figure is kind of a floor. It's a base. It's a starting point. And the reason I say that is that you will see that some of these grants and other competitive sources, you know, we're assuming some level of success, right? And so if we are unsuccessful in certain grants, then that realization comes down, and there may need to be an increase in other areas to fulfill that need. Next slide, please. And so the revenue assumptions for the RTP is a really detailed process, and you're not supposed to be able to read this. This is more illustrative of the level of detail that we go to with our partners to make funding assumptions and revenue assumptions for the RTP. And so we have to arrive at a reasonably foreseeable funding estimate over that full 25-year period, which, again, is a long-term assessment. And as this table clearly shows, transportation funding is extremely siloed. It's already carved up into very specific programs from state to federal, and they have different eligibilities. They can go to capital. They can go to operating only. And there's various matching requirements. Some require 50%. Some require 20%. And so we need to parse all of this and put it all together to make it work in concert. And so we go down to those individual line items for those various sources. And so if you want to dig into this, there is, like I said, more information in Chapter 4, and then also Appendix C of the Regional Transportation Plan has kind of additional information and descriptions of each of these individual funding sources. So next slide. So all of that gets us Next slide, please. Thank you. So all of that gets us to kind of this broader funding by sector. And so this pie chart represents the current RTP's funding by federal, state, local, private, and regional. And so like the EIP, like I said, you know, it requires that shared funding approach, and all of these funds kind of work together, whether it's providing local match to a federal source, so local and federal work together, and it illustrates those current splits. So let's go to the next slide and break this down a little further. And so if you look at how this breaks down, and really this is meant to be an order of magnitude representation of those sector shares. And the funding on this chart is extremely dependent and interactive with each other. And so there are two, the coloring here is meant to represent, you know, that assured funding, going back to the first slides. What do we have really in hand that we can rely on? That's the blue. And then what are those more competitive sources that take more effort and coordination regionally? And that's the red. And so that red part, you know, includes a lot of new local programs like tax measures or local funding. And at the state level and federal level, it's a lot of those discretionary grant programs that I mentioned that the basin needs to compete for. And what I really want to direct your attention to is the far right, and that's that regional bar. So that's the regional funding, the $20 million a year run out through the 25-year term. But that's really where we can make the biggest difference right now, is focusing on that new regional funding, and that's what the Sustainable Funding Initiative is about how do we fill that red bar. And what are the mechanisms that can help us achieve that? And so, as I've said it before, it'll also be make us more competitive to get those other red bars and turn those into blue. So it'll help us be more competitive for federal grants, It'll help leverage federal and state funds, other local funds. And so it all kind of works together in a system to fund projects, because projects in Tahoe, it's not uncommon to have 10 different funding sources in a project. And so, you know, that's challenging to manage, challenging to create a sustainable, predictable program. And so next slide, please. And so to kind of recap, we're kind of looking for this group to discuss, you know, can we land on a starting point of $20 million a year that will then target our evaluation of new funding mechanisms like we've discussed through the work plan of the Sustainable Funding Initiative. And this will also provide a target we can work with to advance proposals that then meet that funding need. So how much are we talking? What are we running at? And so as you've heard earlier today, the RTP and this funding will directly address climate change and the climate policy from both states through that implementation. We also need to make sure we're illustrating those benefits, and the RTP does do that, and that is part of our monitoring and evaluation over time that was discussed at the RPIC meeting this morning. And so also we are underway with the development of equity principles and providing a frame on how these funding proposals will specifically consider social equity. So it'll give us some working sideboards, because that, again, was an outcome of the last meeting of this group. And we're working on those, and I'll report out on that in a second. So next slide. And so as I wrap, let's talk a little bit about what's coming up. We've started working on the policy considerations and all of those great foundational issues that you brought up last month. We are working with the Tahoe Transportation Implementation Committee. So again, just a reminder, that's that implementers group made up of public works folks, the state DOTs, local business, the TMAs, and other partners. And we're making progress on developing the foundational information or basis kind of for the Sustainable Funding Initiative. And that's what we're looking to bring back. And so bringing back those project priorities that have the regional and local needs clearly identified in terms of what are we getting for it, those equity principles laid out, and then quantification or estimates of GHG and VMT benefits of that package. And then we're also going to be bringing forward recommendations, hopefully in short order, on potential funding mechanisms and soliciting. We want to solicit those ideas and making sure that we're looking comprehensively at a portfolio of strategies, and that it does generate the adequate level of funding to meet that gap that I just walked through and identified as that regional need. And so with that, I'm going to go ahead and close and look forward to a robust discussion as the chair was seeking. I agree. I look forward to any questions or discussion on these items.
Thank you, Nick, and thank you, Michelle. I appreciate both presentations. Very good. Michelle, I appreciated the high-level overview of the RTP and some of the goals and policies and how the documents laid out, and certainly, Nick, the deeper dive on the sustainable funding dilemma that we're working on. I see if there's any committee comments or questions. I do have a couple of clarifying questions. I think it's for you, Nick. Listening to your presentation, I'm particularly honing in on the $20 million floor that you discussed. And, you know, for my purposes and for the committee's clarification, is that $20 million that's needed annually, does that include some assured funds, or is that $20 million that's needed annually, is that the $20 million gap that we need to close annually?
to be clear, that's the $20 million gap. So as you noticed, it was all red. It is new funding.
Okay. That's what I thought. I just wanted to make sure it was clear because I know we do have some assured funding sources, but I wanted to make sure we have to, we're thinking about what that gap is. And then lastly, I'm going to sound like a broken record because I've said this before, but I'll say it again. Regarding the red and the 20 million and then, identifying the regional source, I don't have any flaws in that logic. Certainly looking at it from a regional perspective, to find that $20 million gap makes sense. But I also want to make it clear if that $20 million gap can be made up through state and federal funds from by some miracle, I don't think we should say no to it. So I am going to continue to look at that $20 million as primarily a gap and then look at solutions for finding how to fill that gap as opposed to going directly to a certain sector. So I know I'm a broken record on that. I've said it before. So those are my comments. Are there any questions from the committee or any comments? I am not seeing any in chat and hearing any. So with that, let's go to public comment. And my understanding is, Mari, you're going to be handing public comment. So please open up the phones and let me know if there's anybody that wishes to comment.
Yes, Mr. Chair, we have one comment so far, and Steve DeShera, if you'd like to go ahead.
Thank you, Maria. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Steve DeShera, transportation activist at large. Appreciate the presentation and this committee's continued work on this important subject. Just a brief comments today. Nick put out the figure of 20 million as a starting point in the funding gap. I think that is wise to at least start there. In all my experience dealing with the different RTPs that the agency has published, going back to the early 1990s, we always underestimated the funds that it would be needed to actually construct and implement the regional transportation plan that we all support. And I think what's happening over the last couple of years where people see congestion mounting and it doesn't appear that anything is improving with transit or our transportation network, they are losing faith in plans that only talk about what is to be done and do not fund what is to be done. So please do not shortchange the funding gap because we need to show credibility, we need to show action, and we need to show that we as a region, public and private, North and South, Nevada and California, can actually put something together to make Tahoe the world-class destination that it, from a scenic standpoint, and to some extent, a development and redevelopment standpoint, but we have to have the transportation system to support it, knowing that more people will continue to come, that there's growth all around us, the popularity of Tahoe continues to increase, and our inability to fund a proper transportation system is going to leave us subject to many years of trouble. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate those comments, and I want to thank you for just all the work and dedication you've given to this issue and other issues in the basin. Thank you, Steve. Mari, is there anybody else?
Yeah, we do. We have Gavin Feiger. Gavin, if you'd like to go ahead and address the committee.
Yes, thank you, Maria. Gavin Feiger on behalf of the League to Save Lake Tahoe. Good morning, Chair, members, and TRPA staff. That was a great presentation, Michelle and Nick. Thanks for that. As you know, the League has been involved in the development and implementation of every RTP to date. And this 2020 RTP is one of the better ones we've seen. The goals and policies remain strong and relevant, and the updated project list and focus areas are more germane and achievable. We support the 2020 RTP, and we want to see more implementation and progress tracking this time around. We're really excited to see the employer-based trip reduction program, the Commute Tahoe, finally being implemented, and we look forward to helping make it a success. We're definitely bought into that. In order to successfully implement all aspects of the RTP and the related VMT threshold update that we heard about this morning, There's two overarching comments we provided back in October of last year that we'd still like to see addressed. And those two are project prioritization and robust monitoring and adaptive management. So for project prioritization, you know, we recognize that, you know, this federally mandated RTP doesn't really have a mechanism for project prioritization, but that doesn't mean it can't be done. You know, in case we don't raise all the money needed to fully implement the plan, as Steve was just mentioning, we want to make sure that the best projects get funded first. And the best projects are those that have the highest VMT reduction, the highest mode share change, and address the most unmet needs. So the prioritization could start with trade-offs between VMT reduction and non-auto mode share increase based on cost effectiveness. A lot of the legwork's already been done for the VMT threshold update. The second piece is robust monitoring and adaptive management. We'd really, you know, the RTP needs to be revisited every 4 years. And back in October, we asked for an analysis or summary of how we performed as a region in terms of implementation for the 2017 RTP. We'd still like to see some kind of summary that goes beyond the performance measures required by state and federal governments, you know, something that identifies the number or percentage of projects completed in each category and progress towards specific plan goals. In Appendix I, under the Transit Monitoring Protocol, that's a really good example of what we're talking about. That's the kind of performance metrics that would be really, really helpful for the next RTP update and over the course of this year. So, no, these haven't been addressed in the final RTP, but there are some other methods. Really glad to hear Nick say that the TTIC will be working on project priorities based on benefits. Also think there's an opportunity with TRPA's transit MOU with TTD and TART. It could include requirements to collect stop-level transit ridership data and transit project prioritization, and the advisory body being set up for the VMT threshold. That's another great opportunity to track progress and help kind of prioritize projects going forward. So thanks for your time and considering how our suggestions can be incorporated into the implementation phase of this.
Great. Thank you, Gavin. I appreciate those comments. And also really do appreciate your work and other League to Save Lake Tahoe staff and Darcy's work on these transportation issues. It's very helpful. So thank you. Maria, are there additional public comment?
Mr. Chair, there's no further public comment.
Okay, thank you. So with that, I'll close the public comment and then turn it back to the committee. Are there any additional comments or questions from the committee?
Jim, this is Cindy. I had a question for Nick.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead, Cindy.
Thank you, Jim. Nick, in looking at the projections, and I'm sorry I don't have the full document in front of me. It's hard to keep up with that document as well as our packet today. The assumptions, as we're watching kind of gas tax revenues decline and population numbers in, you know, full-time population numbers in the basin decline, how did you look at that as a projection and for the funding that we currently receive for transit operations? Did you make reductions in that, or did you make any assumptions on that moving forward?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, Cindy, because there is a lot of activity, I think, at the federal and state level within those programs that are funded by gas tax, which there's actually quite a few, if not most. And, you know, our assumption is that those programs will continue, and the federal government and the state of California, they're both currently looking at, you know, how do they transition away from the gas tax? And so, you know, after talking with our federal partners and state partners, the conclusion was to keep the program levels because there's no indication that those will change. And they're taking the active steps to try to look at replacing the gas tax. Now, you know, there's a long road to go there, but it did not impact our long term. And so every 4 years, we'll revisit that, right, and see, you know, what that landscape looks like. And update accordingly. But at this point, we kept those programs kind of intact through the life of the plan.
Thank you. As we're kind of looking at the big picture, and I think a lot of the comments from Gavin as well as Steve talk about this monitoring, we also have to be looking at not just the projects, but the funding levels that we're, you know, that we're seeing, and what can we expect, and why regional revenue becomes more within our control than kind of waiting for these other outside sources, especially as it relates to operational baseline costs versus projects. So just aware of a lot of discussions going on in Sacramento related to this, and making sure that we're not dismissing the potential for not seeing much growth in those revenues unless we create those ourselves, and why so many counties in California have actually gone to being self-help counties with that additional sales tax as the means. Thank you.
Thank you, Cindy. That's a great question. I know, Julie, I see that Bill has a question for Nick, and Julie, I know you would like to make a comment. So I guess, Julie, I'll pass it over to you unless you'd prefer to wait until some of the other questions have been asked.
Why don't we work through the various board comments, and I'm happy to jump in after if that's okay.
Sounds great. Thanks, Julie. Bill, you have a question, so go ahead and dive in.
Yeah, I just have a question, maybe several questions for Nick. When does this group, or when does the TTIC dive into the 20 million? Let's just deal with the 20 million. Because that's the regional funding, right? That's just the all red. We need to have it, and we don't have any real source to provide it.
Correct. Yeah, that's what. So we are working with the TTIC right now to bring back to this group basically what is the proposal in terms of priorities and benefits that this 20 million would then help us achieve, as well as then what are those potential funding mechanisms that would help with that would achieve that 20 million. So it's a little bit of a two-pronged approach where you have the foundational information of what you get for it, and then how do you get it? And that's going to come forward to this group over the next few months.
So, if we were to do this based on a $20 million annual, and like you said, we for many of these projects and a couple of our priority projects, we have a 50% match. So let's say doing all the work that we wanted to do on the South Shore revitalization came up with a price tag of $200 million. Well, that 25%. Would be more than our 20 million. And so it may not help us reach that. So I'm wondering if we shouldn't think about the projects that we need and phasing those projects in, and what then would be the regional fix that we would have to have, figuring out all the percentage. You know, the additional work, funding we have to do, but it might bring additional private share into it. I'm nervous about having just a sense that, all we need to do is give Tahoe 20 million. And but when we went and tried to do some of our projects, that would get eaten up pretty quick. That's my concern with that approach, treating the gap, splitting it up over, 25 years, and saying this is what we need as a region. It should be if we could sell bonds and we could cover it that way or something. But if we all we get is 20 million a year, I'm not saying that's insignificant, but it may not get us a transportation system all around the basin.
Yeah, no, I think that is a fair assessment, and that's where the TTIC can provide some of this what we've termed as kind of the rollout plan. How do projects get phased and roll out and take advantage of any new regional funding to match? Because each project is going to have its own unique financial plan, right? And so, right. You know, some of those are well developed, some of those are not, because the projects are maybe sequenced out a little further. And so that's why I think we're starting as a floor amount. Like, we need to have some flexibility here, but we need also a starting point of where to even shoot toward. And so we're trying to at least get the nose under the tent in terms of getting an amount that we can rally around, understanding that, and I tried to make this point earlier in the presentation, that if there are other federal sources or state sources, back to Jim's point, and we're wildly successful, then that just makes that funding go further, right? The regional funding. But if we're not successful, then we need to figure out how to potentially raise additional dollars. And so I think the TTIC's work will help illustrate that in terms of project phasing and how things roll out to take advantage and maximize the new regional funding.
So will the TTIC look at issues that may be way out of the box? Will it just simply follow the formulaic process that we have now between federal and state and additional funds we might be able to get, and kind of thinking how we possibly fill that rather large red bar, not on the 20 million one, but the previous graph you showed where that rather large regional bar has to be fixed or filled?
Yeah, I think we are challenging them to think outside the box and get creative of funding, leveraging other sources. And I think the regional moniker, again, that doesn't mean it couldn't be satisfied by additional private sector funding, additional local funding, additional state or federal funding. It's a recognized gap, and we need to look at that as a group. So I think the flexibility is there and the creativity is there.
Wouldn't most of the responsibility fall west of Lake Tahoe into California to do this?
In terms of visitation and impact?
No, I'm just saying, I just think about the fact that really Nevada has done like a lot of the SR-28. They did the USAID Trail. They do other stuff. NDOT obviously gets this funding from a range of things. But where the headache is in Lake Tahoe in the current situation, even though I recognize Reno and Sparks are growing, as is the Valley, but Carson Valley and Minden. But honestly, it is California. It is MTC's, the Bay Area. Sacramento, Stockton, for the most part, those population centers who on a hot day come out to Lake Tahoe or just to be to Lake Tahoe when it's great skiing conditions. To me, that is where either through some kind of federal initiative or a state, we make the argument that, look, this isn't Tahoe's problem. If we just dealt with our residential thing, we could probably pay for a transportation system that we would develop over time, but not one that would deal with the influx of 200,000 people on a big occasion. We're different, and so how do you do that? I mean, I'm trying to think of ways that the big urban centers. For example, their big issue in greenhouse gas is transportation. For us, transportation is not our greenhouse gas problem. It's energy is our problem, but not really transportation. So if they helped fix our issue, shouldn't they get like a, some credit against their greenhouse gas? Because they are helping us deal with what they're bringing into our basin. I mean, some ways that we can think creatively that they would get something that would benefit them, and we would get something because it would benefit us in having a better system. And overall, the public would win because when they get here, they have something other than their car to get around and just have a better recreational experience. Those are the things that I'm interested in seeing if we couldn't get some of the discussion with some of the other big MPOs to see about how creatively we could get, and then go talk to the Air Resources Board about some way that this tiny little Sierra MPO can't broker some kind of thing that would allow us to get access to more money. Because right now, without us doing something that I'm concerned about being politically volatile, which would be the entry fee, I just don't know how we begin to get this idea across that we need help dealing with the impacts that you're creating for us. And it's not really unlike what we argued in SB 375. What we said to MTC is you're creating the sprawl. You don't have housing for the people that work in the Bay Area. So they all go to Stockton. They all live in Manteca. They all build a new place called Mountain House. And then they get on the road and they come into the Bay Area and we have this problem. And so we put it to them that you have a responsibility to reduce vehicle miles traveled, to reduce your greenhouse gas impact as a result of the sprawl that's occurring in California. So, you know, I think it's that kind of thinking. We've got to partner beyond just the basin. We got to get everybody in the basin to agree to what we're trying to do, but we really need to go out. And I think it's California, because I kind of agree with my colleague Jim Lawrence, is that, you know, Nevada said a lot, and I think it really a lot of these problems are California generated. See if we can't come up with some creative ways to at least begin the discussion, or ultimately, can you give us the authority for us to raise the money, and then what kind of entity would that be? But, you know, they've done it in California. Look at the Golden Gate Bridge. It was built with bond funds, and they had their own authority. They create their own revenue. They're talking about additional, just in Sacramento, we're talking about turning I-5 to the airport into a toll road. So, you know, we do these things. So it's a matter of thinking how to help Lake Tahoe, because if you're serious in the concept of the compact to get people out of the car, and the two states agree that they want to protect Lake Tahoe for a lot of good reasons, including the environment, the economy, public access, recreational opportunities, all those things. Well, we really need to step up now with the investment so we can protect the lake. So that's my issue, Nick, is I'm nervous that you guys are going to go through, because you're used to it, you're comfortable with it, that you're going to go through the kind of formulaic process and then say, and we still have this big red bar. And I think we got to get out of our comfort zone and think of how are we going to push this thing. And there's going to be some pushback, especially in Southern California, where there's probably an immense need for more transportation money. Anyway, that's my thoughts.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. A lot of good thoughts and comments there. You know, and I do hear you. I hear, you know, Nick say that the $20 million is really a floor. And I think this kind of reiterates Steve Teixeira's comment as well, that there are needs. I mean, there's a lot of needs out there, so the $20 million is kind of seen as a floor. But I do appreciate your comments. And I agree with you, Bill, that, you know, as we look for, you know, how do we plug this funding gap? I do think that, you know, going to the traditional formulas isn't necessarily going to get us where we want to be. And we kind of do need to be creative. You know, you mentioned California, you know, Nevada, you know, at the same time, while, you know, I do think, you know, just by the nature of the basin and the geographic area, you know, a lot more of the impacts are on the California side. And a lot of our visitors, Nevada State Parks are California visitors, and that's great. We like visitors from everywhere. But we need to make sure that our solutions match up with the travel patterns. And so that, you know, I think we need a better handle on the travel patterns before we start identifying funding solutions in order to identify the gap. Because again, we want the solution to hit, to address the problem. So I guess one of my comments, you know, along those lines are, you know, with the 20 million floor, you know, maybe some more work, or I'll be curious. I mean, so maybe it's a side conversation of that 20 million. You know, are we looking at that as, is our gap largely infrastructure and getting bonds sold in order to build the infrastructure to support the transportation, or is the gap primarily with transit operations? Because those might need different funding solutions. So that's one of my comments, is maybe, you know, a deeper dive on what constitutes that $20 million gap. So anyway, I don't see any more. I guess I'll ask the committee member one more time. I don't see anybody else on the chat. But, you know, given that, yeah.
Thank you. Just a quick comment. I think you hit the head there as far as separating out transit. You know, our operations and maintenance, that's critical. And it is, to me, looking and being on the Tahoe Transportation District Board, I see a huge gap there and an issue. And a lot of it is the funding mechanism is not, does not recognize tourism as a traffic issue per se. As far as funding goes, it looks at commuter funding, and that needs to change. And I think that you hit the head when you say, you know, that perhaps transit, when we talk about transit, we need to look at that. And I would certainly think that we should be open to talking to our states and federal government about you know, how that's funded, because I think that is an issue. You know, we are not a national park where we're funded for our tourism, and yet that's the brunt of our issue, is we don't have free and frequent transit around the lake, which is what we need to get. And that goes beyond any local authority to be able to master that, or certainly get the funding for that. So I think we need to be open to that conversation too. Thank you.
Thank you, Sue. Appreciate those comments and good comments. And I think it does kind of, you know, I'm hearing a common thread that, you know, we are going to need to be creative, but also a little bit nimble if we're going to really be successful in finding the sustainable funding source. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, this is Haley. I just wanted to jump in here too. This is a really interesting discussion, and just sort of to go out on that creative thinking limb, is, as you know, Nevada is also looking at the electric vehicle angle as we talk about this throughout the state of Nevada. I know California is as well. They talk about moving away from gas cars. I'm just wondering, creative solution wise, if there isn't grants or funding with, you know, it, more electric fleets, more electric transit, more electric vehicles. And you know, anyway, just something to throw out there as well, if that isn't somewhere. And I'm sure someone's looked at this, but just on my mind as we keep talking about as cars get cleaner, right, are there grants or programs or funding that come along with that? Just a thought.
Yeah, thank you, Haley. And I guess I'll kind of pose that to Nick. You know, when you were looking at the funding sources and, you know, taking a look at what might be assured and you know, is still a gap that needs to be identified. You know, how much did you sort of bake into the assured funding the abilities to get electrification grants, for lack of a better term, regarding changing over bus fleets and those types of activities? Was that a factor into your analysis, Nick?
It was. You know, of the grants and programs that we are aware of and that our partners have basically alerted us to, we've included that, and I think you see electrification happening on the TTD fleet. and trying to maximize those programs. But then you're also seeing it in the private sector or utility sector with Liberty Energy or NV Energy doing more charging infrastructure improvements, and we want to make sure we're capturing that. And so, you know, there it's relatively small at this point, but we're definitely open to any suggestions or, you know, getting us familiar with any grants and programs that are out there. I think we have a pretty good handle on it, but we're always open to looking at more.
Great. Thank you, Nick. And we're just going to have to be open to, you know, who knows what opportunities might come in the future. Cindy, I see that you showed up in the chat here. Go ahead if you have another comment or question.
Yeah, I did, Jim. Thank you. And you know, it goes to some of the discussion we had earlier today with the VMT discussion and some of the comments from the Attorney General's office related to business retrofits. One of the things that I think this summer demonstrated to us is even when businesses were significantly closed, many were closed, many at partial closures. You know, the reason people come to Tahoe is not for the businesses are services to them. And so I wanted to echo Sue's comments that this tourism and the people coming here, you know, I don't want us to rely too much on thinking the private sector has a bunch more to give, right? I think that they definitely can participate in solutions and are, but I think we have to be very clear that the numbers of vehicles I see in and around the North Shore, many are also from Nevada because of I-80 access from Reno, but also you know, coming to the beaches and the recreation spots where we can't necessarily collect funds from them. So I think it's really important that we focus on that. And this summer should have been really enlightening when we saw the traffic patterns, despite businesses being closed and events not occurring and the tremendous impacts we had in the basin.
Good point, Cindy, and great comment. Yeah, I agree. And when I think of private sector, you know, there's different ways, you know, you mentioned the businesses and I agree, you know, with your assessment, that, you know, the businesses aren't necessarily the draw and they can only do so much. But I also think it's important to look at private sector involvement in the solutions, you know, particularly at recreational areas, you know, how we can maybe, are there opportunities for private systems to come into place to sort of help with our transportation solutions?
Yep. Yes, absolutely.
So thank you. Anyway, good comment. I don't see anything anymore on the chat. I guess I'll open it up again. Any committee member wishes to make an additional comment or question? This is informational only. So I don't see any more questions or comments, but Julie, I know you wanted to make a comment at the end, so I'll just pass it over to you.
Terrific. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, Julie Reagan, TRPA staff. I just wanted to connect some of the dots from what I heard. This was a great discussion among what we're considering as a policy piece of this discussion. So a couple things have been said about the implementation committee, the TTIC. That's comprised of transportation experts, and that work is essential to provide the data, I think, that's going to help you all as policymakers understand better the hotspots, the visitation clusters that we need to really identify, visitation patterns, that sort of thing. And that is going on. But we're really viewing this committee and similar members of the Tahoe Transportation District as that policy thought leadership around those creative ideas. So I think the discussion today really helps us take this to the next level. But just a couple pieces I wanted to emphasize as we wrap up. And whoever is controlling the slides, if we could go back to the beginning, Nick had a slide with the price tags of the RTP, and I think it'll just help us understand this foundational information. So, yep, that one, that's perfect. Thank you. So the numbers get confusing. And so what we wanted this discussion to really crystallize in the thinking of you as policymakers was that, you know, we have this big RTP and we're anticipating $2.4 billion of projects within the RTP. And we're assuming in that $2.4 billion new revenue of $20 million a year. Call it regional revenue, you know, but like we've said before, if we get other sources to supplement that, we sure will take them. That's the floor. And we've never done this in an RTP. And so I want you as the decision makers understand
Julie, I think you're muted. Hey, Julie, you're muted.
Uh-oh, her audio is completely gone. Julie, we can't hear you.
Of this board in the capacity as the MPO to get serious about delivering transportation infrastructure because we've had at other RTP discussions where we've heard things like, this is an aspirational plan. How do we pay for it? So we are actually really committing as a region, and we feel like there's enough progress that's been made through the bi-state consultation process and other venues, the TTD's work, that we can actually commit to this minimum of $20 million a year. And that is gonna be a high bar, you know, to hit. So I just wanted to emphasize that as you go about digging through the report. And I would direct you to the executive summary. And Michelle had a snapshot of that document in her slides where it really breaks down some of those priorities to get a sense of, you know, operation and maintenance, transit, what are the capital big ticket items. Just as you pour through it, the executive summary does a pretty good job of laying that out because it's a 300 and some page report. We know you're all really busy, but the executive summary, I think, will be a friend to you as you dive into some of this. And of course, we'll be following up with you with some other follow-up meetings, but just wanted to connect some of those dots. And it was, you know, certainly this was a really helpful discussion for us, you know, as staff.
Thank you, Julie. That does kind of help tie things together. I appreciate that. I will say that you kind of cut out, at least on my end, halfway through, which, and your audio went out, which is probably when you said the most brilliant things.
I'm sorry about that.
I think we got the gist. But because the audio cut out, I guess, you know, committee members, do you have any questions for Julie? I don't hear any. And I do. I think it's important to kind of think of the TTIC, you know, in the context of figuring out the implementation issues and then our group and then the TTT group to really dive into the policy issues. But sometimes it's really hard to separate them that much. It's hard to talk about policy without having some of the implementation details, and I would imagine vice versa. So I think, you know, moving forward, you know, we can have some discussions on you know, do we need to do anything more to kind of close the gap or close the loop in the discussions between what's going on with TTIC and what's happening with this committee? We'll have to give that some thought moving forward. I think that's it for this agenda item. I don't see any more comments coming up on my chat. Again, I want to thank the committee for all of the comments and really being engaged in this conversation, and of course to the staff for the presentation. So with that, I think I will move on to agenda item number 6, which is really committee member comments. Outside of this discussion topic, are there any other committee member comments? I don't see any. I guess I will throw, since this is partially EIP, I'll just kind of get the committee updated. I think I've reported out in the past in the governor's recommended budget for the upcoming biennium for Nevada is the sale of $12 million in general obligation bonds for EIP projects in the next 2 years. There was a budget subcommittee hearing on the bond sales last week, I think it was. There were no hard questions, and so I think the presentation went fairly well. And I want to appreciate TRPA and the partnership for sending a letter in support for our bond sales. So that's the only sort of comment I have at this point. And with that, we'll move on to the last agenda item, which is final public interest comments outside of the agenda item. So, Maria, are there anybody queued up to do public comment?
Mr. Chair, there's no public comment.
Okay, thank you. And so that I will close the public comment. And I think that wraps up our meeting. So do we have a motion to adjourn?
So move.
Thank you, Sue. All in favor? Aye.
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 All right.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you all and have a great rest of your day.